A very good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar right here on Eagle FM. I am your host Ndafa Happy Juju and I'll be with you until 14:30. Now it's Wednesday the 27th of August 2025, the middle of the week, when the buzz of national stories sharpens and the direction of the week's debates become clearer. Now whether you're in the thick of your workday in Windhoek, running errands in Rundu, or following us from a classroom, farm or home office anywhere across Namibia, thank you for tuning in. On this program, we don't just deliver the news, we unpack it, we ask why events are unfolding, who is impacted and what it all means for ordinary Namibians, from the economic and governance to, social justice, innovation and community voices. This is where Namibia's most important conversations are grounded and analyzed. And as always, your participation matters. You can share your thoughts with us via Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp, and of course, through the Eagle FM website and app. Now, whether you're on the road in Otjiwarongo, at a construction site in Walvis Bay, or relaxing at home in Katimamululo, we do appreciate you making On The Radar part of your Wednesday afternoon. This is On The Radar, Namibia's stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. Now let's get into the top stories making headlines today. The Bank of Namibia, acting on behalf of the Treasury, announced a strategic shift in government borrowing for the 2025-2026 financial year. Originally, $2 billion was slated to be sourced externally, but due to strong investor appetite and high domestic liquidity, the government will now tap into local market instead. Domestic borrowing for 2025-2026 has been increased to 23.2 billion Namibian dollars, up from the previously planned 21.2 billion Namibian dollars. External borrowing has been reduced to 6.6 billion Namibian dollars from the initial 8.6 billion Namibian dollars. Now, this realignment maintains the government's overall borrowing requirements at 29.8 billion Namibian dollars. The move aligns more closely with Namibia's sovereign debt management strategy, which aims for an 80-20 ratio between domestic and external borrowing. The change was announced during a tender auctioning for 16 internal registered bonds, including inflation-related instruments, reflecting strong interest from domestic investors. And this robust demand, combined with elevated liquidity in the banking system, prompted the switch from external to domestic financing to better manage cash flows and uphold investor confidence. Now, to make sense of all this, let's get in touch with an economist. Good afternoon, Lucas Kumanika.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm all good. It's a pleasure to have you right here on the Radar News Analysis. Now, Lucas, of course, we're talking about the Bank of Namibia, and of course it now sourcing an additional $2 billion domestically. But what does this mean for Namibia's economy that the government has chosen to source an additional $2 billion Namibian dollar domestically instead of externally?
Okay. In terms of borrowing, of course, in terms of the sources, whether it's externally or internal, there are also advantage and disadvantage that comes with all the source of borrowing. So, for example, when we talk of domestic borrowing, of course, it's good for the government because then it's not exposed to to exchange rate risk, because when you borrow in external sources, which is of course paid in the
other currencies,
different currency, denominated in a different currency, then it means that it's subjected to exchange rate changes. But when it's domestic, then it means that the government is not exposed to such a risk, which is called the interest rate risk.
Okay.
But of course, theory has it that there is a disadvantage that is associated with domestic borrowing, which is of course called the crowding out effect, then, which means that the government will start competing for borrowing with the private sectors, which is likely to raise interest. So since the theory has it that as the demand for borrowing, as it increases, then the price of borrowing, which is the interest rate, will then advantages and disadvantages associated with domestic borrowing.
Okay. Something I didn't actually know, hey, or didn't actually ever think about in that angle, that of course they will have to borrow in there'll be some currency, some amounts that need to be added, opposed to just doing it internally, and those can actually be avoided. But does this shift signal confidence in Namibia's local capital markets, or could it also indicate difficulty in securing favorable terms abroad?
Yeah, it's not necessarily to say that it's difficult to, there's difficulties in terms of securing external borrowing, but it just means that there is the domestic market is able to meet demand in terms of borrowing from the government side. I do not really believe that it's the difficult, because there is interest in terms of borrowing, both from the multilateral institutions and multilateral institutions like the World Bank. As we know that the country has been downgraded, so one would already anticipate that, of course, there are a lot of concessional product or loan that Namibia is likely to benefit. So I wouldn't really say it's a really lack of confidence. It's really a lack of ability to secure external source of funds. But it's just to say that, of course, the domestic market is able to meet demand as far as government borrowing is concerned.
Okay. And what about with public debt expected to surpass $168 billion, and the debt to GDP ratio nearing 70%? How concerned should Namibians be about debt sustainability?
Yeah, the issue of debt rising percentage to GDP is a concern, and it's quite of a risk, because it means that the country is likely to use its GDP, a high proportion of its GDP, to fund its debt. And it means also then that when we have to meet these obligations depending on the maturity or the length of the maturity of those kind of securities, say, for example, bonds. So it then means that instead of using that money, which is generated from GDP, to fund services, then services such as health, education, and all other things that the government needs to source, then it will use it, of course, to meet its financial obligation. So there is a risk in terms of that resource allocation, what is available to spend and what is available to meet financial obligation as far as borrowing is concerned. And of course, there is a component of debt servicing, which is have to put into consideration. So basically, it's a bit of a concern, and it's a risky in terms of resources available to fund development in the country.
Okay. Lucas, how does this borrowing strategy impact Namibia's ability to attract foreign investment in the long run? It's not that they will be looking domestically instead of externally.
Yeah, in terms of, it may affect, but I do not want to assume that, of course, it will impact to some extent. Probably it might, but foreign direct investment comes in different forms. There is, of course, greenfield investment, whereby you have an entity coming from a different country coming to set up a business in the country. So FDI or foreign direct investment is may not necessarily be affected by this move, but of course perhaps maybe in terms of maybe what will be affected is in terms of shareholding per se, which may not necessarily so, but in terms of greenfield investment, the greenfield investment is likely to be unaffected, because that is just of course an entity deciding to coming up to come set up a project here, and it's not really and operate for within or from this the country, and it's not really it may not really be affected by the decision of the government to borrow externally or internally, but is rather affected by other factors such as maybe stability, maybe it's more of the investors will look at the favorable
conditions,
environment, whether the environment is favorable for them to, of course, invest. So it is affected by other macro macroeconomic factors, rather than just the government decision to either borrow externally or internally.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, Lucas, as of course the Bank of Namibia sources now domestically within our borders of Namibia, of course, could we expect very low interest rate on this 2 billion Namibian dollars to be sourced domestically, or could we perhaps expect fairly maybe the same, more or less, not so much difference? Of course, excluding now that we're trading in other currencies, if we used to source externally, could we expect perhaps more or less the same, or how?
Yeah, in terms of the market interest, theory has it, as I explained initially, theory has it that as you increase, as the borrowing increase, because the government then tapping into the domestic financial market is then a likelihood of increasing. Then there is, of course, a likelihood of increasing demand. And when you increase the demand in terms of borrowing, of course, the price of borrowing is interest rate. So you expect that as the demand go up, as the demand go up, then you expect the interest rates to go up. But of course, it will depend on also another component. If there will be the component which is the, of course, private borrowing or borrowing by private businesses and households, then also if there is also an increase, then we anticipate that a huge or significant increase will be expected, which will then likely to push up interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And also just looking at also the price stability, as far as price stability is concerned, given also how the spending, because borrowing then, the government borrowing then means that also the government will then have an ability to spend, and then when there is inability to spend, it means that the demand is of even goods and services also is likely to increase, depending on the magnitude of spending from the government side.
Yeah.
So when the demand of goods and services also increase, we anticipate that the prices also will then go up. Then once the price go up, then of course the central bank, as far as the monetary policy concerned might then intervene through at least sort of increasing the interest rate, which may further push the interest rate
higher up. Okay. Interesting. Lucas Kumanika, thank you so much for making time for us. I do always appreciate when I have economists in studio trying to break down very huge numbers that the ordinary Namibian will be trying to figure out what exactly is trying to be make, what exactly they are trying to make sense out of it. But thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. And for now, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We're still breaking down this news. We'll be back to continue with yet another economist. Stay with us.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Okay, and we're back. Now, Namibia's borrowing requirement has surged over recent years for the financial year of 2023-2024 at 10.1 billion Namibian dollars and 73% of that domestic. For the 2024-2025 financial year, 15.3 billion Namibian dollars, 12.8 billion sourced domestically. Now, for the 2025-2026, 29.8 billion with 21.2 billion domestic and 8.6 billion externally. The country's public debt is expected to exceed 168 billion by the end of the 2025-2026 financial year, putting the projected debt to GDP ratio between 68% and 68.5%, nearing the 70% threshold. Now, this raises long-term sustainability questions. Analysts at Simone Storms have warned that the domestic market is approaching its limit in absorbing additional debt. Pension funds, insurers and banks already carry heavy exposure to government bonds, which may drive yields up if demand wanes on liquidity tightens. Now, a $750 million euro bond comes due in October 2025. Namibia has built up a sinking fund of over $500 million, and the remainder will be financed through enhanced domestic bond insurance, underscoring the shift toward local liabilities. Now, this borrowing shift reflects both optimism by leveraging strong domestic demand and strategic caution by smoothening government cash flows while safeguarding against external market volatility. However, with rising debt service obligations and saturation risks in the local market, the government must trend carefully to preserve physical health. With that being said, let's pause right here, take a short trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back right here on the Radar News Analysis.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, of course, let's move over to what's been making headlines recently, the green schemes. And of course, yesterday, as we celebrated Heroes Day, it is announced that our president will now be taking tours to visit the green schemes in Zambezi region, of course, including Vunguvungu, Linia, and then all the other green schemes. But to help unpack that, we're joined by our journalist, Anakleta Haikera. Good afternoon, Anakleta. Pleasure to have you.
Good afternoon to all the Eagle FM listeners, and good afternoon to those that are now at work.
Mm. Anakleta, it gives me quite some stamina, should I say, in terms of Namibia's food security. And of course, a lot of Namibians looking up to the green schemes and just hearing, listening to hear what's making headlines in that regard. And of course, not so long ago, we had the Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources taking a visit to the green schemes. And now we have the President also taking a tour to the green schemes. Just give us a highlight of what's currently going on.
All right. As we all know that yesterday was Heroes Day, and the president is currently in Katima Mulilo. Today she will be visiting and going on a site visit to the Kalimbezi rice project, where she's just going to observe what is really going on out there. And tomorrow morning she will be in Divundo, that is Shadiko Ngoro Green Scheme, one of the biggest green schemes in the Kavango East region that is owned by the state. And she will also see to it to visit Ndongalimena, which is just after Divundo, and she will be at Uvunguvungu, and then on Thursday she will proceed to the Kavango West, where she's going to visit Sikondo. And basically her visit will be just to see to it that what was in the NDP 6 to say that the green schemes are operating at 100%, because she needs to see to herself to witness if this is indeed true or is this something that was made up.
Mm.
That is the whole initiative of the visit for
mm-hmm.
tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Now, of course, our green schemes, some are doing well and some not doing so well. And of course, we've had so many visits, by different, leaders. Are we seeing perhaps, positivity coming forth apart from just the visits? Are we seeing, this being put into action soon enough or perhaps maybe after some time? What's your take on that?
Basically, now that the president is coming through to the green scheme, I think a lot is going to change, especially the communications between the green scheme managers and the workers, because basically this was one of the main concerns, that there was a misunderstanding between some green scheme farm managers and the workers. That is perhaps why the green schemes were not progressing well, because certainly there were basically just infights between who is going to plant first and who's going to harvest first. And with the lack of machines that the green schemes are having, most of the green schemes were merely affected. For instance, if we talk about Ndongalimena, there was indeed wheat that was perhaps were supposed to allegedly be donated to the small-scale farmer, but then the commercial area by then did not have any wheat. So now the farm manager decided perhaps to plant within the commercial farm before giving it to the small-scale farmer, but then the small-scale farmer did not want to understand this. So they thought perhaps the farm manager stole from them, and there was a bit of conflict in between, but then it was later resolved and now everything is going under control. And moving on to Uvunguvungu, it was a thing of the scale itself, the green itself, not having a combined harvester where the small scale farmers who harvest their maize and also the commercial farm manager could harvest this maize. So the maize was left within the field for a longer period of time until they decided to borrow a combine harvester from Grootfontein. And that's when they finally harvested their grains. But then it was already too late. That is now one of the cases that was in the Uvunguvungu grain scheme.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Now, of course, with our leaders visiting there, and the hope of the Namibian people being on this green schemes, could you perhaps, just for you now, this question comes as a journalist, Anakleta, do you think perhaps in the next 2 years we could really be up and running, and perhaps food security will be now something that we really certainly embrace? You know, I tell you something, just a month ago, I went in the shop and I bought a sack of potatoes, 7 kg. It cost me $100. Previously, now this was $130, round about that. And then I saw just the other day, I went into the same shop and the basket and a 7 kg potato is now $69. Now you begin to ask yourself, is it because now the Namibians themselves are bracing themselves and producing locally that perhaps the shops, of course, are now feeling that perhaps we're buying from them and not really, but just what do you think an overview of the future in terms of food security here in Namibia? Just what do you think?
The future for food security in Namibia, from my personal view, it's going to be very, very good if we, the people and the government, start investing more into agriculture. Because when you look at it, you were initially talking about potatoes. Like at Secondo, they harvested overly 16 hectares of potatoes, and it came out very, very, very good, and the harvest was 100%. So now when it comes to the marketplaces, definitely this is going to sell because the potatoes are beautiful and they are on a lower price. Why would one want to import something from another country if we can just do it within our green screen? And also to say, if they can give more land, perhaps, for the green screen to expand a bit and maybe not only concentrate on grain, but also concentrate on other, like for instance, the orchards or perhaps the sunflowers that we have at Shadi Kongoro. Mm-hmm. But then instead of us having it on 24 hectares, it can be expanded to more than that, which means it's going to help. So we don't need to get oil from foreign countries, but rather get it within the country. So all we need is just more money, and the investment should be more into agriculture, and people should go to school and knowing that if I have to study in an agricultural field, I'm not only going to be working in the field, but I can also do technology agriculture that is going to help me in future as well. And I bet everybody is going to love agriculture, and then we as Namibian will start producing food for ourselves and also for other countries as well. So we don't need to import goods anymore.
Actually, hey, you have it right there, Anakleta. Thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis. And of course, one thing we do appreciate, and for the listeners, should you be interested in the president's visits to this green schemes, and also perhaps you are keen and in following and wanting to know what's going on, make sure you do follow our Facebook page, because Anakleta is very faithful in educating us in that matter. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. And of course, let's pause right here for now, and we'll be back shortly. Now, should you also want to share your opinions or contributions with us, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually
to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Still continuing with our story in terms of the Bank of Namibia, of course, acting on behalf of the Treasury, announced a strategic shift in government borrowing for the 2025-2026 financial year, of which originally $2 billion was slated to be sourced externally. But due to strong investor appetite and high domestic liquidity, the government will now tap into the local market instead. And of course, now joining us is Nina Menoveri Erastus, and he wrote the story in the Villager newspaper. Should you be interested, you can, of course, head over to the e-paper and read up on it. Good afternoon, Gabriel, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon to you, Juju, and you now have said three names, ma'am.
You've got so many names, man. You're confusing me.
Welcome to Africa. Our parents are always happy to receive kids.
Yeah, ne. Now, Gabriel, what risk does Namibia face in domestic investors such as pension funds, banks, and insurers if they become overexposed to government bonds? And Simone Storms kind of raised this alarm in that angle. What do you say?
Okay, theoretical literature-wise, and also the observations, there is minimal risk in terms of being overexposed to government debt.
Mm.
That's why even if you look at our laws, the non-FISA laws, especially for the non-banking, we used to call it Regulation 13 and others, that they are allowed to invest 99, like to a level of 90% in government bonds.
Okay.
So it started by there. Even the law itself and the regulation allowed these non-banking institutions or any to be exposed to government debts or bonds to a certain of to even more than 50%. So you see, so it started from there, and it's from this principle that government debts are risk-free or there's no risk. And this is because, especially now, let me talk about on particular government, because it is never it's never like got to a level where it couldn't pay its debt.
Okay. Defaulted?
Never defaulted.
Okay.
So now from that principle, given that government has the ability to borrow, government has the ability to raise money through the revenue agencies. So from that principle, the risk hasn't been really high, or we say there is no risk investing so much or being overexposed. And also another thing which is giving confidence, if you look at NAMRA collection, they are really doing great. They are doing great in terms of making everybody comply.
Mm-mm.
Now, yes, the risk are there, because if you look now at the government debt repayment profile over the shorter period, the medium period, there is so many bonds maturing. And if you look at how they are doing also, they're just rolling over. They borrow from John to pay for Thomas, and that is the cycle that they have.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is the only problem now. But at an investor level, you don't care where they are getting their money as long as they are paying you back.
Actually.
So at the investor level, there's no really so much risk that the government will default, because the government size and the availability of tools that they can utilize is massive. So at an investor level, that is what gives you confidence to keep giving them money. So that is it. So there is no really risk. But at the macro level, if the economy doesn't perform, yes, government has to borrow and keep borrowing and rolling over. And that is just perhaps worry of the public, not really for the investor. For the investor, it's just that as long as you pay back. And again, even if you look in Africa, there's no many countries really that have defaulted, even though Zambia came close, also Ghana almost did, or they did. And also, I think Kenya, if I'm not mistaken, so Ghana have employed even haircut procedures to and all that. But in terms of Southern Africa and Namibia, we never really got to such a level where government defaulted. They just keep utilizing their massive size and their revenue and their ability to borrow to go back then and get more money and repay back, and the cycle continues.
Okay. Now, Namibia has a 750 million US euro bond, US dollar euro bond maturing in October 2025. Just how prepared is the country to meet that obligation without straining domestic markets?
Yeah, can you just repeat that question again?
Namibia has a 700 million US dollar euro bond maturing in October 2025. Now, how prepared is the country to meet that obligation without straining domestic markets?
Yeah, there is no way we are not going to squeeze ourselves. As you can see now, there are two ways. Government has a fund in place, a contingency fund, where they are putting some dollars to prepare for themselves.
You know,
the other option that they have, they are going to raise more money from their...
Yeah, you know, so sorry, I have a commercial break coming up.
Stock up for August with real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99. 1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 Hi Baby active diapers at only $124.99. See all our real value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Okay, sorry about that. You know, Minovari, let's continue.
Yeah, so my point is that there is no way we are going to do this without actually squeezing our own market. Because the contingency fund that we have in place is not sufficient to cover the whole euro bond. So the other alternative or the other option that government has or they are putting in place that they will borrow from the domestic market. So as you can see, there are approaches that they will approach the financial sector, mostly the banks, because the banks are full of liquidity now. They have so much money. So actually, yeah, our domestic market has so much money. And and it's coming at the best timing. I'm sure the Minister of Finance is just celebrating. It's coming at the best time where they have to repay this loan. So they are going to capitalize on that to be able to repay back the loan. And it's so fortunate that we have so much liquidity. Liquidity meaning we have so much underlying capital which is not performing at the level we're supposed to perform. So it's looking for places where it can grow. So if we, and that's why now government will be to utilize it. But again, that the contingency fund is as we taking money elsewhere that we're supposed to spend on social and economic whatever. But unfortunately, we are no more spending $10 to stimulate the transportation or to stimulate the agricultural sector. No, we are spending. We are reducing it because we are putting some few dollars away on our contingency fund to repay the loan. That is now the real and practical impact because we are cutting our national expenditure. And our national expenditure, remember, is the injection in our economy to stimulate activity elsewhere or to supply or to fulfill our social commitments.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the real impact. But in terms of squeezing the market is doing okay. The market is so much money floating around. The real impact is on where we are cutting to supplement the contingency fund. That is where the real impact is. And it's now scary, as you are saying, our neighboring country like Botswana are declaring emergency because they do not have medications. So that is where when you are borrowing from the external side and things come now time for you to repay, you have to reduce your expenditure. Especially now, because this does not work like in business. In business, like you borrow and invest in a particular thing in your company,
Yeah.
And that's the particular thing that you invested in. It repaid to generate money for itself.
Yes.
In terms of government, you are investing in infrastructure that are not even performing. Mm. You are investing in some social projects that are not generating.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where the issue is.
Mm.
Yeah.
Actually, hey. Now, what does this decision overall mean for ordinary Namibians like I? Will it translate into higher taxes, tighter credit, or improved physical stability? Just what does it mean for us?
Yeah, in terms of increasing taxes, we can't. Unfortunately, we can't. We can't because the sector are facing a lot of issues. If you look at the diamond, it's not performing, and that means you expect the job losses to come. Every other sector needs support. You are having USA tariffs that are coming on your beef, that are coming on your diamond, that are coming on your gemstone. So the expectation is that, yes, we just expect some of the government commitment might not be fulfilled as fast as we wish. Like, we have so many bold commitment in our NDP.
Yeah.
And we have some underlying projects that are ongoing. So the impact will be some of those projects might not be finished on time due to budgetary constraint. Some of them might be postponed. Or unless really, really we try to boost the private sector, yeah, which is going to be very tricky. To create the employment. So what is practical is that we need to come to a realization that most of our commitment of job creation and others by government might not be realized. And this is not because I'm hating on my government. No, it's you're just looking that government has commitment to put money away to repay our debt,
mm-hmm.
and that means that money has to come from somewhere. They cannot borrow everything. So that reduces our expenditure in certain things. So that is what it means. And it will affect all of us. It's just now that the government has to be really, really be good in terms of priorities. Where do you want to spend? Can we perhaps focus on the hospital to make sure they have the medication,
mm.
to make sure that when I go there, I only spend 30 minutes. And also we focus on our school, which is, and water. We look at the priority areas. Once we look at the priority areas like water supply, electric supply, and medication, then we now ensure that the private sector grow. Because when you are able to supply those things, especially the utility, the entrepreneurs are able to come in. But if government does not do proper priorities, then you go spend the money elsewhere, which is not stimulating the private sector. Then the impact on reduced expenditure is going to be felt by everybody. Because, yeah, the price are not growing because electricity, water are expensive, hospitals are full, no medication.
Yeah.
Now my employees have to spend 2 hours at the hospital. Now my productivity mm-hmm. is going mm-hmm. down. So government has to create a balance that what can we do to make sure that our people are healthy, to make sure that our existing businesses are supported. Where can we spend that money? That is the key question. But if we follow our past way of doing things, where you are just giving money to ever SOEs, which are supposed to make their own money and all projects that are not generating in a medium term, then we are going to have problems. Because number one, you're not supporting your businesses. Number two, mm-hmm. your labor market is not being supported. People are sick. People have no access to basic things. And number three, the cost of doing business in your country is high because you are not providing the public goods. So we have to, our government technocrats, really have to sit down to say, where do we prioritize?
Yeah.
So we move faster mm-hmm. and we provide basic things that enable the private sector to flourish. When the private sector is flourishing, they will create the jobs that we promised. That is the key. Because if government is not growing as we usually do, but is supporting the private sector to grow, the jobs will be created. Number will collect revenue. So that is now the key thing that they have to do. But if we don't do that, yeah, it's going to be a bit of a mess, but yeah, I mean, I'm trusting the forces, I'm trusting the people in the thing, and I think we just need to continue the dialogue between the private sector and the government to see where do we need to move faster, where must we spend money for now, which one must we cut, just to make sure we create a balance, our fiscal stability is in place, our private sector is supported, and we are creating new level of growth that are not so dependent on our national budget while we settle our external debt.
That's very clear. Thank you so much, Nginomenore Erastus, for making time for us right here on the Radio News Analysis.
All right, ma'am. Thanks.
Okay. And there you had it from our in-house economist, also just breaking down in terms of this borrowing that is set to be sourced domestically and not externally this time around. Now, of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Now, remember, you can also be part of the news analysis. All you have to do is dial in on 083-288-401.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. And now for economic indicators. 1 US dollar today is equal to $17.76, while 1 euro is equal to $20.57. 1 Australian dollar is $11.49, while 1 pound sterling is equal to $23.85. 1 Botswana pula is $1.32. 1 Kenyan shilling is $0.14. And with that being said, let's move over to trading economics. The Integrated Bank Australia manufacturing PMI rose to 49.1 in August, from 48.2 in July, marking its highest level since July 2024. Now, the improvement was driven by a solid rise in output, with production volumes expanding at the fastest pace since May 2022. Purchasing activity also recorded the smallest decline in over 3 years. At the same time, the contraction in new orders moderated, suggesting early signs of demand stability. While export sales declined, but at one of the weakest rates since the downturn began in May 2022. Conversely, employment fell for the 28th consecutive month as firms continued to cut costs. On the price front, input prices rose at the fastest pace, while output charges declined for the 4th consecutive month, and competitive pressures. Now, looking ahead, business confidence remained positive, though it eased slightly from July's peak. The Swiss Investor Sentiment Index plunged 56.2 points month on month to -53.8 in August 2025, signaling renewed pessimism after a brief positive reading of 2.4 in July. Now, this is the weakest level since November 2024. largely weighed down by introduction of 39% U.S. tariffs on Swiss exports in early August. The U.S. accounts for roughly 17% of Switzerland's total exports, making it the country's largest export market. Analysts expect Swiss export momentum to weaken over the next 6 months, with the relevant sub-index dropping sharply from -35.1 to -89.8, the largest drag on overall sentiment. Meanwhile, the current conditions index remained neutral at zero, down from 9.5 in the previous month, reflecting subdued assessment of the previous economic situation. Let's pause here now, and we'll be back shortly after the commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Get your monthly essential packs for just 599 Namibian dollars at USAID. 10 kilograms each of Sugar King white sugar, Top Score Super Maize meal, and the Back Pro Fed Cook flour. Also 5 kilos Rice King as well as 500 grams Pasta King pasta. All 5 products for only 599 Namibian dollars. You save. I save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
Is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Velvetia University introduces new short courses available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Law. Programs, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution, Admission Requirements, Grade 12 Senior Certificate or Equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Certificate in Telecommunications Policy and Regulation, Admission Requirement, Grade 12 Senior Certificate or Equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Course cost 5,500 Namibian dollars. Application period from the 1st of August 2025 to the 30th of August 2025. Visit www.wu.edu.na to apply. Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever. Enough news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa, where they are hosting the 27th Interpol and Illicit Financial Flows cost Africa up to $80 billion a year, according to Professor Firoz Kachala.
Back now to the Western Cape, to the 27th edition of the Interpol African Regional Conference. We understand now that Police Minister Firoz Kachalia is on the podium. Let's listen in.
To strengthen safety and security on our continent,
So I'm very pleased on behalf of the South African people and the South African Police Service to be hosting this event this year in Cape Town, which I understand follows from an event in Luanda 2 years ago, which I'm sure you're going to be building on in your deliberations over the next few days. So I think it's appropriate that you are convening in Cape Town, in South Africa. I have been looking at the program. I'm not going to be with you for the deliberations after the opening ceremony, but I asked the national important body. I've been hearing about the number of policing organizations, countries, and so forth that you represent. Very impressive, and I look forward to working with you in the years ahead. So now I'll get to the formal part of the speech. It is both an honor and a privilege for me, on behalf of the government and the people of the Republic of South Africa, to welcome you in our country and to this 27th Interpol African Regional Conference. We are deeply appreciative of the trust and confidence placed in us to host this important gathering of leaders, experts, and practitioners committed to strengthening the rule of law and ensuring the safety and security of our nations, our continent, and indeed the entire globe. The conference convenes at a critical juncture. Transnational organized crime remains one of the most serious threats to peace, stability, and development across Africa and beyond. Its manifestations, as we heard from the National Commissioner and the President, are diverse, from drug trafficking, human trafficking, which is, of course, particularly upsetting, illicit firearms, cybercrime, as technology evolves, wildlife crime, particular problem in South Africa, money laundering and terrorism, to name but a few. Thank you very much. To name but a few of the most threatening. These crimes transcend borders, exploit technological advances, and undermine the security of our peoples and the integrity of our respective states and economies. We are all mindful, particularly, of that syndicated crime is not static. The evolving nature of criminal activities, the emergence of new trends, and the use of sophisticated technologies by criminal networks compel us to constantly adapt our responses. This is a task that demands a collective, concerted, and focused effort. It requires robust strategies and the concrete implementation of agreed actions at national, regional, continental, and global levels. So, Mr. President, your five-year plan is very important, and I hope that the five-year plan will be properly executed while it's in duration. The importance of this conference lies not only in its agenda, but also in its substantive agenda, policy agenda, but its practical orientation. We are gathered here to generate solutions that are both strategic as well as pragmatic, solutions that can be implemented effectively within our countries and within the frameworks of our regional and continental organizations. Our deliberations will help to shape a more coordinated African response to transnational organized crime, one that strengthens the security of our borders while protecting the rights and well-being of our people. It's a point I can't stress too much. It's become very clear to me since my appointment that our challenge in this country, and I'm sure that this is the case in many jurisdictions, is transnational organized crime. And we are challenged to ensure that we are fit for purpose, that we can meet these challenges. For South Africa, our participation in this conference.
Let's have those 10 amendments of constitutional reforms celebrated.
The State House is being transformed to a party site with traditional dances and songs. The government and its coalition partners are celebrating that Lesotho has been removed from the regional body SADC's naughty child's list, a weight off Prime Minister's shoulders. When I accepted your commission, taking on premiership, I made a vow before God and the nation that I will do all within my powers that Lesotho is removed from SADC's agenda. Prime Minister Matekane says his wish has been granted in the recent sitting of SADC's ordinary sitting. Following my 10th Amendment presentation and presenting a request that with this efforts, Lesotho be removed from SADC's special watch list as a result of instability. This request of mine was then granted. Today, Lesotho is now counted among peaceful and stable countries, which can now be entrusted with responsibilities within the SADC region. This a milestone to development partners who accompanied the country through more than 10 and rather challenging years.
This reform journey, which touches on the very pillars of democratic life, from constitutional renewal to judicial reform, parliamentary integrity, security sector transformation, and the modernization of electoral law, is not a destination for Mele Bondate, but a continuous process.
To some, this is a necessary achievement to Lesotho's self-sustenance. You can see that even our struggle against apartheid has been a futile exercise because the current administration in South Africa are inheritors of apartheid who seem content with the same challenges that we fought apartheid against. They inherited them as they are without any desire to address them. Meanwhile, the opposition is adamant that rushing to submit a flawed 10th Amendment to SADC was merely to appease the regional body with a process that has two clauses that is open to litigation.
In spite of our advice on the floor of the House, government was in a hurry to rush to Madagascar and go and impress the heads of state there that they now have the 10th Amendment Gazette. But you can't do that. You don't play around in the Constitution. Once we allow it to pass in this manner, then for goodness sake, you are essentially saying, do what you please about the Constitution. It shouldn't be done.
Remedies, what would you be asking the court to do?
Well, We are saying the court must expunge the offending clauses. Some legal minds say actually it is the whole bill that has to fall. That is not for us to say. We are simply asking the court if it can expunge the offending clauses and then they can go back and be redone properly. But if the courts say that the whole bill stand or falls with the validity of those clauses, so be it.
While the opposition says it applauds the progress and is willing to assist to rectify the errors, it says it, however, remains adamant that it will opt for litigation should the government not be willing to play ball. I'm Rabelang Hadebe for SABC News, Masewolosu.
Botswana hospitals faces medical supply shortage.
Seeing a dire shortage of medication and medical equipment, political parties' views are divided on the declaration of the state of public health emergency.
This has compromised our fight against HIV/AIDS. It has compromised our fight against NCDs, as this has been demonstrated by lack of access to proper services. The government has been sitting on this problem since the beginning of this year. We are not talking about like a natural disaster or a pandemic like COVID. We are talking about man-made problems emanating from lack of structure, lack of coordination, and lack of control. Our position is the government would want to suspend laws to do what they want to do. This should have gone through parliament, like previously when this was done. It had to go through parliament.
The background to this is that we have been running short of medicines for quite a number of months. This is the problem that emanates from the time the UDC government came to power. And fundamentally, we have been short of a number of critical items, including medicines. So the president's step is a fundamental one, very important to alleviate the situation which was deteriorating in our health facilities and hospitals.
Botswana Development Corporation is spearheading the process of securing some 6 billion rand to address this challenge.
As you know, Botswana is heavily reliant in mineral revenues. Diamonds have not been doing well for quite some time, and the price and obviously the buying activity in that industry has been really slow to non-existent. So this means that Botswana is responsible for, diamond mining is responsible for 80% of exports revenue into Botswana. And it's a big contributor to the government budget. And over time, in the last couple of months, government has not received cash flow from this revenue source.
The first batch of medication has already been dispatched to remote areas and are to be distributed by military personnel. Itumele Nkajane, SABC News.
Let's still go into it on why Botswana has public health emergency.
To Botswana now, the Southern African nation has declared a public health emergency after hospitals ran out of essential medicine. The government said that the medical supply chain had failed and announced $18 million in emergency funding to restock hospitals. President Boko released this video appearing to show the military overseeing aid deliveries. In the past, Botswana had previously received significant aid from the US, and recent budget cuts by the Trump administration have worsened the public health situation. Let's now cross over to the journalist Famelo Ramasu in the capital of Botswana. Famelo, can you describe what you're seeing inside hospitals and clinics right now?
Before yesterday, the situation has been bad. We have been seeing patients who have been prescribed your medications, and then they have had to go home without these medications. We have seen nurses or healthcare practitioners who have had a low morale, you know, because how are you expected to treat a patient when you don't have the necessary medication to treat them? But today the situation has improved. We are excited. We are happy with these developments, welcome developments, and we are hoping that this is for the best.
Now, what are the main factors behind this crisis?
One of the main factors has been our central medical stores. We have heard yesterday from the president. He shared that there have been an inflation of prices. just to give you clarity, on average or annually, the Central Medical Stores needs 705 million. That's the quote that the president shared. But a task force which was formed discovered that the money or the figure was lower than that quoted price. The figure is around 80 million. So you can see that there's been a problem. Again, another issue is that the CMS was buying through a middleman, which maybe can explain why there was this big disparity between the quotations.
Now, the military is now involved in distributing supplies, and many are saying that the move by the government is not really substantial. But how is the public reacting to all this?
We trust our disciplined forces. We trust them to bring calamity. We trust them that they are going to deliver. So with their involvement, we have been seeing most of these medications have already arrived at our health post, our clinics. So we are happy. Although there are mixed reactions concerning this involvement, some are happy, some are not happy.
The journalist, Famila Ramasa, they're reporting from the capital of Botswana. Thank you very much.
Meanwhile, health workers in Uganda are trained on mental health.
We have rollout training on how to integrate mental health and psychosocial support in peace building and conflict response. In peace building and conflict response, statistics present that 35% of displaced adults are faced with a mental health disorder. And for children, it's even worse, 85%. For the youth, it's even worse, 56%. So left unattended to will naturally lead to recursiveness, like the recurrence of this vice, of conflict, of violence. Because, you know, if we do not bring them to order, if we do not heal them, help them heal, then it is very likely that they will again get back to these vices. Because we are talking of over 2 decades of war. This is not small. We are talking of over 2 decades of displacement. We are talking of 2 decades of torment. This is not small. So healing is very vital. Healing is needed. And it's the reason that this training workshop has been organized.
We are considering this topic because in most cases, for example, sexual and gender-based violence, you may concentrate on physical harm, where someone has been beaten or cut. Then you forget the mental health and the psychosocial aspect of it. So it's very, very important that we consider this as we prevent and respond to sexual and gender-based violence.
So in some way, I think this is going to help us that as many people are being reached out in the communities, then it's going to prevent these mental health issues from escalating to a level of the referral hospital, from symptoms getting so severe, but rather the community can be able to identify these issues, understand what it is that they can do, and actually be managed when the symptoms are still mild, when the condition is still mild, so that it prevents it from escalating.
Nigeria suspends Abuja-Kaduna train service after derailment.
A derailment on Abuja-Kaduna corridor has prompted authorities to suspend train services and launch a full-scale investigation. On Tuesday at around 11 a.m., a train from Abuja derailed between Kubwa and Asham stations, narrowly avoiding disaster. Emergency responders quickly mobilized, evacuating 618 people, including 583 passengers, 15 crew members, 8 cleaners, 11 catering staff, and 1 medical professional. Seven passengers sustained minor to moderate injuries and were taken to nearby hospitals for treatment. The remaining evacuees were safely returned to Idu, Kubwa stations via rescue train. The Nigerian Railway Corporation announced a temporary suspension of all services on the route. A refund has been issued to affected ticket holders and Federal Ministry of Transport has begun formal investigations. This derailment adds to a worrying trend. Nigeria's rail network has seen 188 derailments in 6 years.
Cholera outbreak in Chad leaves 63 people dead.
Since the first case of cholera was reported in Chad on July 13th, the Central African country has recorded over 900 suspected cases. At least 63 people are reported to have died from the outbreak in Wade province. On Monday, Chad's public health minister, Abdelmajid Abderrahim, met with health authorities in Wade to discuss strategies to prevent the disease from spreading further. Chad is currently hosting hundreds of thousands of refugees who fled Sudan's ongoing conflict. Many are living in crowded camps with limited access to clean water and sanitation facilities. These conditions, medics say, significantly increase the risk of cholera transmission. So far, cholera outbreaks have been reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Republic of Congo, Ghana, the Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and Sudan. The UN Children's Agency has warned that around 80,000 children are at high risk of cholera as the rainy season began across West and Central Africa. The World Health Organization defines cholera as a waterborne disease caused by eating or drinking contaminated food or water. It causes severe diarrhea and dehydration and can lead to death within hours if untreated. The infection spreads rapidly in areas with poor water quality and inadequate sanitation systems. Scientists note that cholera can ultimately be eliminated by providing access to clean water and sanitation facilities as well as good hygiene practices. Wilkinson Abwasi GTN.
World Meteorological Organization warns of heavy rains and landslides in East Africa.
The World Meteorological Organization's latest seasonal forecast for October to December indicates that southeastern Ethiopia, northwestern Kenya, southwestern Uganda, northern Somalia, and parts of Rwanda will experience heavy rainfall. The three-month rainfall is important for the East African region, contributing up to 70% of the annual total in parts of Kenya and Somalia. In countries like Uganda, WMO indicators point to a higher Nile River level compared to 2024. Lake levels in the region reportedly rose above last year's prediction, with flood extent already at an alarming level. Parts of southeastern South Sudan and parts of northeastern and southwestern Uganda are expected to be wetter than usual. Aid agencies, including the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, project that flooding could displace millions of people. On the temperature outlook, the forecast indicates an increased likelihood of warmer than surface temperatures across the region. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development has urged regional and national authorities to take proactive measures to prepare and respond effectively. Daniel Arap Moy, CGTN.
Are markets complacent over Fed risks? Let's take a listen.
Traders wave goodbye to summer calm as markets are yanked from their seasonal slump. A Goldilocks summer is all but over. As traders came back to their desk this week, they were confronted by weak data prints, AI spending concerns, and President Trump's latest assault against the Fed. There's plenty to suggest the calm won't last. Chris Beecham is chief market analyst at IG. So Chris, let's start with Trump's move to oust Fed Governor Lisa Cook. Is Fed independence now truly at stake if he gets his way?
I think it faces greater risks than anything we've known in recent decades. There's plenty of evidence from decades ago, from the 60s and the 70s, of when the Fed was different and when government control, if you like, or dominance was more of a thing than it is now. It does mark a significant departure from what we've known since the financial crisis. And this is the key concern, really, that if he can succeed in getting rid of Cook and then others on the board seem more willing to do his bidding, it looks like we're in for a very different time in terms of US central banking policy.
Are markets being too complacent about Trump's threats to the Fed, especially as it risks pushing bond yields higher?
Well, yes, I suppose they are, really. This is a year in which, having weathered the storm of Liberation Day, they seem to have been able to be far more sanguine about other risks. And perhaps this time around, they are underpricing it. I think it's something that you really can't stress too highly, that there is a risk here of the independence of the Fed really being called into question at a time when the US budget situation really doesn't allow for this kind of uncertainty. If the US is benefiting from its exceptional status, then Fed independence is the one thing that can't be sacrificed. And I think if markets begin to fret a lot more about this, I think at the moment they see this attempt to get rid of Cook as unlikely to succeed because of the legal challenges. But I think if by some means he was able to succeed, then there would be, I think, a lot more concern creeping in among investors.
Let's switch gears now to Nvidia, and given its unprecedented weight in the US market, its earnings have become a key event. So can its strong earnings results after the bell today dispel creeping AI doubts?
Well, I still think they can. The salient feature of Nvidia earnings the past sort of three or four times has been how we gear ourselves up for this, and then it proves to be something of a damp squib. We don't get dramatic reaction. There's certainly no replay of what we had last July. So there's always the potential, however, for some kind of concern creeping in. And certainly at the moment, the big questions around AI remain unanswered. But this is a company that's managed to deliver again and again. Now, you might get some short-term disappointment, but unless there's some really unpleasant shocks within the outlook statement, I think we may get another fairly decent reaction.
On the data side, though, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation is due up this Friday. Expectations are for a too hot for comfort number. Could this sway a cut in September?
Well, I think.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onko Nanadingi program brought to you by Luisa Shimi.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye. My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katutura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katutura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Input just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana nongeshifa yae shiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayakudo nirandisoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, konara heta tuimu. Datu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to...
Yeah.